Shall we turn now in our Bibles to Luke's Gospel, chapter 16, beginning with the first verse of this chapter tonight, Luke 16. In the 15th chapter, and remember, we're still on this Sabbath day that began in the 14th chapter, so we're spending a Sabbath day with Jesus. It's a pretty eventful day. Began in the house of a Pharisee at dinner, where Jesus was invited, along with a man who had a disease known as dropsy. And they watched Jesus to see if he would heal this man on the Sabbath day, and Jesus did. Then he lectured them about their invited guest and how they should accept invitations. And he went out into the streets, the crowd followed them, and he warned the crowds about the Phariseeism that he was facing. On the same Sabbath day, Jesus later on was eating with some of the sinners, publicans, and the Pharisees found fault with him. They said, "Oh, this man receives sinners and publicans, and he eats with them." I'm glad for that accusation of Jesus made by the Pharisees. I'm glad to know that he does receive sinners. Thank God he received this sinner. And I thank God that I can have the most intimate fellowship with him. He eats with them. And Jesus gave a series of stories which compose one parable, three parts. It dealt with lost things and the natural response to finding something that is lost. The shepherd who had lost the one sheep and searched until he found it and came rejoicing, inviting his friends to rejoice with him, for the lost sheep had been found, and Jesus declaring the rejoicing and the joy that goes on in heaven when a lost soul is found. The second was a lost coin by a widow woman who sweeps and searches through the house until she finds a coin. And she calls her neighbors and says, "Rejoice, I found my lost coin." And so there is more joy in heaven over a sinner who repents than the many who don't need repentance. But then there is the lost son who has taken his inheritance, has gone to a far country, wasted his inheritance on riotous living, gets down to nothing, gets a job feeding pigs, and he tries to fill himself with the corn husk that he is feeding to the pigs, and he comes to himself and says, "This is stupid. My dad's servants live better than this. I'm going to go home. And I'll say to my dad, 'Dad, I don't deserve to be called a son anymore. I've blown it. I recognize that. I'd just like a job. I'd like to be one of your servants.'" And so he decided to go home. And while he was yet a great way off, his father, who no doubt had been watching for him, saw him coming. And he ran to meet him. And as he started to give his little prepared speech, "Dad," and he was interrupted. His dad said, Kill the fatted calf. Let's have a party. Put the rings on his fingers. For this my son who was lost is found. And they were partying. When the elder son came in from the field, he said, "What's all the noise in the house?" "Oh, your brother came home. Your dad's killed the fatted calf. Come on in and join the party." "No way, that rat." And so his dad came out and said, "Son, what's your problem?" He said, "I've been faithful to you. I've always stayed here and stayed by and worked with you. This rotten brother of mine went out and spent all of his money on whores and booze, and now he comes home and you're having a big party and rejoicing. You never had any party for me." And the dad said, "Come on, son, all that I have is yours. But ought we not to rejoice because this one who was lost is found?" Now, this parable was really directed against the Pharisees and their attitude when they said, "This man is receiving sinners." Jesus is showing that finding that which is lost should not be a cause for snide remarks or for sneering. It should be a cause for rejoicing. The natural thing to do when you have found something that has been lost is to rejoice. The Pharisees were murmuring. And so he has directed this parable against them, and they caught it. They recognized it. When he gave the punchline, they realized that they had been had. And then he said to his disciples also. The word "also" is the key word in that. For the Pharisees are still listening, but the remarks are addressed to the disciples in the hearing of the Pharisees. This last little series of stories was directed at the Pharisees. Now he turns to his disciples, and in their hearing, he continues. In verse 14, it tells us that the Pharisees also, who were covetous or who loved money, heard all of these things. So they were listening, but Jesus was talking to his disciples, but they were listening. And so he said unto his disciples also, "There was a certain rich man which had a steward. And the same was accused unto him that he was wasting his goods." Now, a steward, though he was a servant, was a highly trusted servant. The steward was the one who was the master over the goods of his lord. It was his responsibility to pay the bills, to collect the bills, to take care of the affairs of business for his master. And the chief characteristic of a steward was that he should be faithful, diligent in his exercising of his duties for his master. Paul the Apostle said, "We are stewards of this manifold grace of God, and it is required of a steward that he be accounted or found faithful." And so, though a servant, yet he was a servant to whom much was entrusted. But the steward that is in our story here was not trustworthy. He was not faithful or diligent in managing the affairs of his Lord. He had been wasting his master's goods. He had been irresponsible in the discharge of his duties. And so he is called by his Lord to give an accounting. An audit is called. I want you to give accounting to what you have done, and you're fired. He's going to be relieved from his job. And so the steward was faced with a dilemma. He said, "What shall I do? For my Lord is taking away my job, getting fired. I cannot dig." Probably it's just not my disposition to go out and dig ditches. I can't see myself doing that. And I'm too proud to beg. To beg, I am ashamed. That's just pure pride. I know what I'll do. So that when I'm put out of my stewardship, they may receive me into their houses. So he came on to this idea, his solution. He called in the debtors, those men that owed his Lord certain debts. The first man that came in, he said, "How much do you owe my Lord?" He said, 100 barrels of oil. He says, "Take here your bill, write 50, sign it." And so he cut the bill in half. The second man came in and said, "What do you owe?" "I owe 100 measures of wheat." He said, "Here, make it 80. And he signed it here, you know, and he cut him 20% off the bill. And the Lord commended him. Commended the unjust steward because he had done wisely. Now this, of course, is hard to understand. But notice, it was not our Lord that commended him. It was his Lord that commended him, his boss. He said, "Man, that guy is smooth. He's really wily, smart." He commended the unjust servant because he had done wisely. He recognized, hey, that guy was shrewd. Didn't commend him because what he did was good or right. What he did was rotten. He was cheating. But he was smart in that he was using his present position to set himself up for tomorrow when he wouldn't be in this position. So taking advantage of the opportunity that he had now to more or less set himself up for tomorrow. That's the wisdom. You've got certain opportunities now that you're not going to have tomorrow. You've got to take advantage of today and what has been given to you today and use it wisely to set yourself up for tomorrow. And so he was commended because of the wisdom of his actions, not the honesty of them, just the wisdom. He's still called an unjust steward. And then Jesus comments, "For the children of this world are in their generation wiser than the children of light." Now, the key word here is "in their generation." The children of this world in their generation. Wiser than the children of light. You see, their generation is now. They're not wiser in eternal things, in the next generation. Or in the eternal things, they're fools. But in this generation, they're wiser than the children of light. Look how the children of this world present their goods to other people. Take beer. That rotten smelling, horrible tasting stuff. But look how they present it. Man, you haven't lived until you've broken open a case of beer in the High Sierras, you know. With fish on the fire. I mean, this is really living, man. And it's presented in such an attractive kind of a way. The children of this world in their generation are pretty wise. It's personal opinion, but please allow me my own personal opinion. I don't think there's anything uglier than a woman with a cigarette hanging out of her mouth. Now, that's my personal opinion. And and yet, look how they glamorize it in the advertising. You know, you're cool, you're chic, you know, and you just learn how to hold it, you know, and you're so glamorous. Though it is giving you lung cancer and drying your skin and staining your teeth and your nails and your fingers. They present it in such a glamorous way that, you know, if you want to really be, you know, on the end, you know, you've got to be sitting there coolly, you know, smoking your cigarette as you watch the horses race or something. The children of this generation are very wise. Children of this world in this generation, they're very wise. They're very clever. In the way they present their bill of goods. In contrast, look how the gospel is so often presented. On TV, for instance. Man, you'd say, that guy has got to be a shyster. Or a huckster. You know, and they're presenting the gospel in such a way that God is broke and he's desperate and he's about ready to go out of business. And if you don't send in your money this week, you know, it's going to be over, man. And here we have this glorious gospel of Jesus Christ, the greatest thing ever for man, and it's presented in such a shoddy way to the world. For the children of this world are wiser in their generation than the children of light. We have a lot to learn. But the thing is, though the children of this world may be wise in their generation, they are fools as far as the world to come. And they are fools as far as spiritual things are concerned. And for them, a spiritual experience is some kind of a sensation that they get after chanting the mantra or contemplating their navel for an hour. So in spiritual things, you get them out of this temporal generation bit and you move into the eternal, the spirit, they're stupid, they're fools. But in the worldly material things, extremely wise. They are wiser than the children of light in these worldly material things. So then Jesus went on to say something else that was hard to understand. I say unto you, make to yourselves friends. And the difficulty is the King James translation, which is a poor translation here. Make of yourselves friends of the mammon of unrighteousness. A more literal and better translation is make of yourselves friends by the means of the mammon of unrighteousness. That when you fail, they may receive you into the everlasting habitations. Make to yourselves friends by the means of the unrighteousness of mammon. Now, money is not evil. Money is not good. Money is non-moral. It is what you use your money for that is either evil or good. Money itself is just a non-moral commodity. What makes it evil or what makes it good is what you do with it. Now, Jesus is suggesting that you make use of it in such a way that it will have eternal value and bring eternal dividends. Make use of money. Make use of the unrighteousness of mammon, that when you fail, they will receive you into the everlasting habitations. You see, one of these days, it's going to happen to every one of us. We're going to fail. The old heart's going to fail. I mean, that's just something that we know. We don't do much thinking upon it and be rather morbid if we did. But one day we're going to, all of us, fail. And one minute after you die, you're not going to be able to sign any more checks. And what you have amassed to yourself in that bank account is going to be spent by somebody else. The moment you die, you've lost total control over all of your assets. Everyone will leave everything when they die. You're going to leave it all. Now, knowing this, knowing that I'm going to fail one day, knowing that one day I'm going to leave everything here, what Jesus is saying is, as this steward took advantage of his present situation to set himself up for the future, knowing things are going to be changed, knowing I'm not going to always have the present advantage that I do now, things are going to be changed very dramatically, very soon, he took advantage of his current position to set himself up for the future. And that's exactly what Jesus is advocating. That was wise. And it would be wise for you to take advantage of your present situation where you still have control and to use those things that God has entrusted to you, which are really His. You see, God is the Master. He is the Lord. And I am a steward of what God has placed in my hands. Whatever I have in reality belongs to God. The earth is the Lord's, the fullness thereof, and all they that dwell therein. Now God gives to me a certain portion of His goods to be responsible for. And as a steward, I am to be responsible unto God for that which He has placed in my hands. Now, this particular steward in our story was accused of wasting his master's goods. I wonder how many of us would fall under that same category. We would be accused of wasting our master's goods. There used to be a time in my life that I was contemplating how much of my money can I afford to give to God. But that isn't really the way to look at things. I should be looking at it. How much of God's money dare I afford to spend on myself or for myself? I am the steward. It's God's. He's placed it in my keeping. I'm responsible unto my Lord for how I take care of His affairs and manage His goods. Now, He is saying, use your money for things that are eternal, for the spiritual things. That when you fail, which we all will, they may receive you into the heavenly habitations, into the eternal habitations. I wonder how many people will be waiting for you when you get to heaven to receive you into the eternal habitation, saying, you know, when I got up here and I looked over the books, I found out that you were the one who supported that missionary that brought me the gospel. And I owe my salvation to you. Thank you. And basically, that's what Jesus is talking about. The proper use of our Lord's goods. In the Sermon on the Mount, He said, don't lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust corrupt and decay, and where thieves can break through and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven. And that's basically the thrust of this parable, is that you lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, that you be a wise steward, that you take advantage of the opportunities that you have now with what God has entrusted you with, to be used for the eternal values, bringing unto others the glorious light of the gospel of Jesus Christ. The other day, I found myself in a rather awkward position. I was in Amsterdam, and there was something I wanted to buy there. But all I had was U.S. currency. And they wouldn't take it. They wanted the guilders. I said, but I don't have any. Well, they said, we can't sell you then your merchandise. I said, but this is American money. You know? This is the United States dollar, you know. Well, it's not current here. You'll have to go to the bank and exchange it for the guilders if you want to buy your merchandise. Now, your currency is not current in heaven. Gold is not current in heaven. It's asphalt. So the only way is to exchange now your currency for that which will be current in heaven. Because there's no bank of exchanges inside the gate up there. No money changers. Where you can exchange for heavenly currency. Because, you see, when you die, you're going to leave everything here. If there were banks or money changers up there, you'd be out of luck anyhow because you can't take it with you. And so the only way that you can invest in eternal things is now, taking advantage now of that which God has entrusted in your care and keeping. So Jesus said, I say unto you, make to yourselves friends by means of this mammon of unrighteousness, that when you fail, they may receive you into the everlasting habitations. For he that is faithful in that which is least. And what is least? The material things that we have on this earth. That's the least. But if you will be faithful in these things, then also he will be faithful in much. And he that is unjust in the least is also unjust in much. Therefore, if you have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, who will commit to your trust the true riches? If God can't trust you with the mammon here, if God can't trust you with money here, if he can't put money in your care and keeping and you use it wisely for his glory and kingdom, then how can God trust you with the true riches, the riches of the eternal kingdom? And if you have not been faithful in that which is another man's, it belongs to God, but you've not been faithful in taking care of it, then who shall give you that which is your own? For no servant can serve two masters. For either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money. They can't both be your God. It's one or the other. You can't serve them both. You can believe in them both, but you can't serve them both. And the key word there, of course, is serve. You cannot serve God and money. Now, the Pharisees also, who loved money, heard all of these things and they derided him. They were listening to what Jesus was saying to his disciples, but because they loved money, they derided Jesus. What he said is hard. He's laying down some tough guidelines. And if you love money, you're going to find yourself in the position of the Pharisees, rather angry at what he said, saying, well, I just don't think that makes sense. No pun intended. So next week we'll continue on with this second portion of the Pharisees and what he has to say to them because of their response to what he said to his disciples. Next he turns and speaks to the Pharisees, and then he closes the chapter with the story of a rich man and his destiny in comparison with a rather pitiful man and his destiny.